Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On August 7th, 1988, Chicago sports writer turned aspiring novelist Keith Reinhardt locked up his antique shop and set out for the same mountain he'd spent the summer writing about. Keith told friends he'd be back by nightfall, but he never returned. What's even more chilling was that he wasn't the first person to disappear from the small mining town of Silver Plume, Colorado. Just under a year earlier, a bookstore owner named Tom Young had similarly locked up his store and set off, only to seemingly vanish into thin air. Two disappearances, one old mining town. What dark secret connects them? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Keith Reinhardt. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, before we get started on today's story, I do want to just address the fact that this week's episode was supposed to be the story of my arrest, but for a few logistical reasons, we aren't releasing that yet. And it has to do mainly with a FOIA request that I've put in that they are jerking me around on right now. So I'm kind of in a fight with the FOIA person at the sheriff's office at the moment that I'm still trying to get figured out. So yeah, so basically before we release the episode, I just want to have all of my other ducks in a row as are related to this case. But honestly, even if I can't get it figured out before we release the next episode, we're just going to put it out anyway, because I don't care at this point. It's been too long.
All right.
They're just making me more angry, which doesn't seem like the best idea.
Well, I mean, they don't know you.
I know. You're very, very true. Very correct on that. They don't. But yeah. And, you know, maybe they won't. Maybe they won't ever know that I'll put out this episode about them. But
probably not.
You know, it's going to happen one way or the other. So anyway, so you can expect that next week. Unfortunately, not this week. But this story I wanted to bring you, and it's so creepy to me because a man became obsessed with a disappearance in a small town, and then he also vanished under nearly identical circumstances. And it begs the question, did he vanish on purpose? And some people think that there's more to the small town of Silver Plume than meets the eye.
You say a mining town and people go missing. My first thought is the first guy went out and fell into a mine, and the second guy became obsessed with it and went searching for him and fell into a mine.
Well, so it's not like a mining town like you're thinking of being from Western Pennsylvania, like, you know, like a company town full of coal mines or whatever. It was a mining town during the gold rush.
So, well, yeah, there's abandoned, basically, holes in the ground.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I feel like people just went to, like, streams and, like, sifted things and they were looking for gold.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe they dug tunnels and...
Yeah, but I'm just saying, Listen, I wrote the script and, like, you know, mines actually don't come into this at all.
Okay. Well, that's why I was waiting to hear the rest of the story.
Yeah. No, this is another hiking story, and it's making me more scared about hiking. But before we dive into Keith's story, we want to take a moment to thank our amazing Patreon supporters. So thank you to Denka M, Joe S, Sabrina M, Charity H, Kaylee T, Camilla A, and Sherry M. We are so grateful for your support.
Thank you all so much.
If you want to join them, you can head over to our Patreon and join at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes and a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So now with all of that out of the way, let's get into the disappearance of Keith Reinhardt. Keith R. Reinhardt was born on December 10th, 1938. He was a journalist who wrote for the Daily Herald in Chicago, covering high school sports. He was married to a woman named Carolyn and had two children, a daughter Tiffany and a son named Kai. Now, I'd read in one source that he and Carolyn had only been married for 3 years at this time, so I don't think she's the kid's mom. I'm guessing this was a second marriage. But if he was basically a newlywed, which I feel like when you've been married for 3 years, like that's still like the newlywed stage.
Sure.
Then it makes his decision in 1988 even more odd to me. That summer, Keith was getting ready to turn 50 and he was in a bit of a midlife crisis. It seems as though he may have felt a little bit stuck in his newspaper job and had dreams of writing a novel. One of his childhood friends, Ted Parker, ran a cafe in an old mining town in Colorado called Silver Plume. Now, over the years, Silver Plume has had its ups and downs, but by the early 80s, it was called a living ghost town.
Mm.
It only had a population of about 140 people.
Oh my God, I want to live there.
Yeah, it's like it barely exists.
Can we go?
I mean, probably. I don't know. I think it's not that far from Denver. We could probably go visit Denver and then like take a drive down there. But we're not going hiking because, like I said, I wrote this and it doesn't end well for anyone. So Keith decided that this was going to be the perfect place for him to clear his head, have a change of scenery, and write his novel. So he informed his wife that he was taking a 3-month leave of absence from work and he was going to go to Silver Plume, open an antique store, and write his novel.
Without her and the kids?
Yeah. And his kids, I think, were adults, or at least teenagers, like, but I think closer to adults at the time. In any case.
But definitely without her.
Yeah, definitely. So Carolyn obviously like thought this is a little bit crazy, but she eventually supported him. And the idea was that if he could make this work, right, if like the antique store, you know, could support them and he wrote his novel, that maybe they would just all move there and leave Chicago behind and have this life in this like dead mining town, I guess.
Okay.
Keith arrived in Silver Plume with three goals: to write his novel, to get in shape by mountain climbing, and overcome his fear of heights.
Hopefully not in that order.
Yeah, no, I think you do have to do that in a slightly different order in order for it to work. But Keith's friend, Ted Parker, said that Keith arrived in June of 1988, quote, apprehensive and excited about turning 50. He came to Silver Plume to finish out the last of his 40s in the way that he had dreamed of, end quote. So he got there. He found a little apartment to rent in the back of an abandoned Catholic church.
Yeah. That sounds so creepy.
I know. But it's like, you know, you're in a dead mining town. Where else are you going to find an apartment, I guess?
I don't know. In an apartment building that's half empty?
I don't know. But like, that sounds kind of cool. I'd like to live in the back of an abandoned Catholic church.
Yeah, until the first night that you're there by yourself.
Yeah. You know, he was living his plan, right? But then everything took a left turn when Keith rented the storefront for his antique shop. And this antique shop was apparently like antiques and matted photographs, was how it was described in the business license, I guess. So, and he was a bit of a photographer. Like, he liked to take pictures. So I don't know if they were his photographs or, you know, what exactly this was going on in this business.
Or if he matted and framed them.
Yeah, I don't know if it was other people's photographs. Even though Silver Plume is a small town, it still gets a decent amount of tourist traffic.
Mm.
And so I think that was kind of like who he was gearing this business toward.
Gotcha.
So anyway, he rents the storefront, right? But it turns out that the storefront on Main Street was the same old Knights of Pythias building that had housed Tom Young's bookstore a year before. So who was Tom Young? Tom Young was a Vietnam veteran and retired teacher who owned a travel bookstore, which honestly, I didn't even know that was a real thing. I thought that was
outside
just made
of Notting
up.
Hill.
Exactly. I literally just thought that was made up for like Hugh Grant in that movie. I've never seen a travel bookstore in my life.
Yeah, no, I thought that was just a joke.
Yeah.
In the movie, because, yeah. You know, it is a joke throughout the movie.
Right. But no, so Tom Young owned a travel bookstore in Silver Plume, Colorado.
Okay.
And he was apparently also writing a novel.
A travel novel.
That I don't know. He was there. He owned the same storefront, right? But about 10 months before Keith arrived in town, Tom vanished. On the morning of September 7th, 1987, Tom closed up his shop with his dog, Gus, by his side. He told friends that he was going on vacation in Europe. They wished him well, but when several weeks passed and he didn't return, they began to worry. Tom was reported missing, and during the investigation, it was found that he never had plane tickets booked or any actual plans to go to Europe that they could find. He was just gone.
And you said this was 10 years before?
10 months.
Oh, 10 months. I thought it was 10 years.
No, 10 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so he disappeared at the beginning of September of 87, and Keith moved there in June of 88.
Okay.
So Tom Young's disappearance was still the talk of the town as Keith settled in, and then he became obsessed with it. Once he learned that his shop had once been Tom's bookstore, it was over. Keith eagerly quizzed locals and read through old case files. By midsummer, he was obsessed with the mystery and talked about it constantly. In fact, Keith decided to base the protagonist of his novel on Tom Young. He created a character named Guy Gypsum, who was a composite of himself and Tom, and wrote scenes mirroring Tom's disappearance. By the end of July 1988, Keith had poured himself into Silver Plume life and Tom's case. He ran the shop during the day and spent evenings typing away on his novel. In his free time, he hiked and even bought a metal detector to go panning for gold and silver in the nearby rivers. Yet, underlying it all, was Tom Young's disappearance and Keith's attempt to understand it through fiction. Though the mystery of Tom's disappearance had been going on for nearly a year by the time Keith arrived, the town was able to get some answers shortly thereafter. So like I said, Keith got there in June, right? On July 31st, 1988, so just, you know, not even 2 months after Keith arrived, hunters on the slopes of Pendleton Mountain, which is near the south side of Silver Plume, found a gruesome scene. Tom Young's body was half buried in brush along with his dog, Gus. Each had been shot once in the head.
Oh, wow. Really? I was going to guess that it was like, you know, mountain lions or something.
No. I'm sure mountain lions got to them after.
Yeah, eventually. Sure.
Yeah.
But
no.
Gunshots.
Gunshots. A Smith & Wesson Model 36 revolver was found at Tom's side. It was later determined that Tom had legally purchased that gun just a few days before his disappearance.
All right, so my guess with this would be PTSD from Vietnam, decided to go out hiking to kill his dog and himself. Well, I mean, to kill himself, but he couldn't let his dog go. Killed his dog, killed himself.
That's a conclusion that everybody came to. The Clear Creek County Coroner and Sheriff's Office ruled the deaths a suicide. And yeah, they determined that Tom had killed his dog and then himself, just like you said. But people in the town weren't convinced. They didn't believe that he would have hurt Gus, saying that Tom was devoted to his dog.
Yeah, I mean, he was so devoted that he didn't want anybody else to have him.
Oh.
I get it. Like, that sounds really, like, messed up, but I don't say that's kind of normal when you're dealing with somebody that's suicidal, but it kind of is, you know?
I mean, I don't know. I just, like, the idea of, like, shooting your dog in the head is
It's terrible, but I, you know, it's the thought of this is my dog. It's nobody else's.
I want him to be with me.
I want him to be with me. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Ugh.
Not saying it's right.
Right. No, I gotcha. But people, like I said, didn't really think he would do that. And beyond that, there were a few other reasons to doubt the suicide theory. Investigators couldn't definitively say whether or not the gun they found was the same gun that was used to shoot Tom and Gus. And, you know, I'm guessing that's just because the fact that they had been out there for a year. And honestly, those photos are just out on the internet. And I never look for crime scene photos because I do not like to see crime scene photos. But it was just in the middle of a random article. And so I saw both Tom and Gus, and they were completely skeletonized.
Yeah.
By that point. Right. But the skeletons were pretty intact. But regardless, I mean, I'm guessing that just due to the age of the skeletons, they couldn't definitively say whether or not it was the same gun. But in any case, they couldn't, right? So that sowed doubt in people's minds. But to me, even more compelling and creepy is the tarp. When the bodies were found, a shredded green tarp was spread over them, which to me seems a lot more like concealment of a crime than it does suicide.
Yeah, potentially.
I mean, yes, listen, it's not definitive, but it's not nothing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, yes, it's definitely the most likely explanation that it was suicide. But
I mean, the fact that, to me, the fact that he told his friends that he was going on this European trip.
Yeah, but didn't have those plans.
Yeah, like that's, to me, that says it all. And the tarp, like, okay, he went hiking with his dog. Who knows if it was cold?
Yeah.
Whatever. He pulled the tarp up, shot his dog, shot himself.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think it's so interesting that he was missing for almost a year. And I do think this is completely coincidental, like, obviously, but it's just so interesting to me that his body was found like a month after Heath got into town,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's weird.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. Like, the whole thing is just weird. So Tom Young was found, but a week later, Keith Reinhard would be gone. I started waiting tables at 14 and had no money management skills, so I kind of had to learn it on the fly. But we're trying to help our kids out a little bit more than that. That's why we've partnered with Acorns Early, so our kids don't have to learn money lessons the hard way. Acorns Early is the smart debit card and money app that grows kids' money skills as they grow up. You can start with the in-app chores tracker and teach your kids the value of a dollar. Then let them set up their own savings goals and start building healthy money habits early. They can spend what they've earned with their very own customizable debit card, giving them that extra sense of independence. Plus, with Acorns Early spending limits and real-time spend notifications, parents always stay in control. Our youngest son loves logging into his Acorns account and seeing how much money he has. He also loves the freedom of being able to budget his own money and spend it on the things he wants to spend it on. Ready to teach your kids a smart way to earn, save, and spend? Get your first month on us when you head to acornsearly.com/ATTWG or download the Acorns Early app. That's 1 month free when you sign up at acornsearly.com/ATTWG.
Acorns Early Card is issued by Community Federal Savings Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to license by MasterCard International. Free trial for new subscribers only. Subscription fee starting from $5 per month unless canceled. Terms apply at acorns.com/early terms.
Did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common, yet often overlooked, nutritional gaps affecting 1 in 3 adults, especially women? I'm a lifelong vegetarian, and so getting enough iron has been a constant struggle. There are plenty of times when I tried to give blood and I couldn't because my iron was too low, especially in my 20s when my diet consisted of mostly pasta. So I have had to take iron supplements at various times in my life. So when Citerol from PharmaNutra wanted to advertise with us, it was a no-brainer. It's a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea and constipation. It's vegan and gluten-free and 100% allergen-free and free from artificial colorants. So if you feel like no matter how much you rest, you're still running on empty, you're not alone. Over 2 million people have already discovered Citerol, and it could be the support you've been looking for. So head to PharmaNutra-US.com and use code ATTWG for 10% off your first order of Citerol. That's PharmaNutra-US.com, promo code ATTWG for 10% off today. Did you know that a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I tried the True Age and True Health test by True Diagnostic, and it showed me things I never learned from my regular physicals. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. You'll see your vitamin levels, your nutrient balance, inflammation, gut health, and more. True Age measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number, it shows how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are all aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations to improve your health and slow down aging. For me, it really inspired me to work on my cardiovascular health. It's so hard to get answers at the doctor's office, so I loved getting this report that had so much information on it. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code ATTWG for 20% off. Your future self will thank you. On Sunday, August 7th, 1988, the stage was set. It had been 1 week since Tom Young's body was found. That day, Keith closed his antique shop around 2:30 p.m. and casually announced to his friends that he planned to hike Pendleton Mountain. Nobody really took him seriously, though, because that was an insane idea. The hike to the top and back, so like round trip, was a 6-hour voyage. And while Keith had been doing some casual hiking, he didn't own any actual hiking gear. And he also hadn't gotten over his fear of heights in the month that he'd lived in Colorado.
Right.
So apparently he had like tried to do that hike before, but had to stop because he got vertigo. So around 4 p.m., Keith went to Ted Parker's cafe for a chat. In the front of the room, he pointed toward Pendleton's summit and told Ted, quote, "I'm going to make it to the top of the mountain," end quote. Then, laughing, he said, quote, "If I don't come back, call on the rescue," end quote. Ted later said, quote, "I have a picture of him pointing to the mountain and saying goodbye. That was the last time I saw him," end quote. Now again, even though Keith told his plan to several people around town, no one thought he was serious. It was already late afternoon, and Pendleton's peak was steep and far. Again, so, I mean, he didn't leave until like 4:30, 5 o'clock, meaning if he was actually going to do this, he wouldn't have been back until almost midnight.
Right.
And the sun set at that time around 7:30, I think. And like, he had no experience. He had no equipment. Like, he had nothing. But nevertheless, by 4:30 p.m., he stepped out of town on foot, walking south toward the trail. He wore only blue jeans, a flannel shirt, and tennis shoes. He had no jacket, no backpack, not even a bottle of water. That was the last time anyone saw Keith Reinhard alive. As dusk fell on Silver Plume, Keith had not returned. By the next morning, Ted grew anxious and called the sheriff. What followed was one of the largest search and rescue missions in Colorado history. By August 8th, hundreds of volunteers, deputies, and Colorado Alpine Rescue members fanned out over Pendleton Mountain and its surrounding peaks. Helicopters combed the forest canopy, search dogs ran through thickets, and ground crews worked along ridges and gullies from Sherman to Prospect Mountain. As Alpine team leader Charlie Szymanski later described it, quote, "The Reinhard search was like looking for the proverbial needle in a haystack. This haystack is 3,000 vertical feet of 60-degree slope. This was about as difficult a search terrain as we cover," end quote. He added that the searchers were at a serious disadvantage. After all, Keith had set out with no gear. This meant that there wasn't really any belongings that they could look for. Over 7 days, they covered every inch they could reach, but found no trace of the missing rider. Szymanski told reporters, quote, "A typical subject of a search will leave lots of clues for us to trace. Keith didn't," end quote. The search was finally called off on August 14th, 1988. volunteer teams had logged over 10,000 man hours. As the sheriff's report noted, hundreds of people had combed through the woods for a week without finding a single clue. Tragedy also struck one rescue crew when a Civil Air Patrol plane crashed into Pendleton Slopes, killing the pilot, Terry Leedens, and injuring the spotter. After that accident, authorities reluctantly suspended the operation. But by then it was clear neither Keith nor any sign of him was going to be found. Back at Keith's apartment, friends rifled through his belongings for answers. On his computer, they found the final paragraphs of his unfinished novel. In it, Keith had written about Guy Gypsum getting ready to hike. Quote, Guy Gypsum changed into some hiking boots and donned a heavy flannel shirt. He understood it all now and his motivation. Guy closed the door, then walked off towards the lush, shadowless Colorado forest above. End quote.
I mean, so are we thinking this is like art mimicking life or his own weird suicide note because he was dealing with the midlife crisis / depression of turning 50?
Yeah. I mean, people didn't know, right? But like that paragraph was apparently the last thing that he had written.
And then he donned
a flannel shirt
and walked off into the lush hills of
Colorado. Yeah. Like,
okay.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, that passage sent a chill through the people reading it. And that was the question that they asked. Was Keith, like his character, preparing for one final walk into the wilderness? Or was it just fiction? Keith's wife, Carolyn, didn't see it as a suicide note. She knew her husband as an optimistic person. He was someone who was always preaching a positive mental attitude. And she later insisted flatly that Keith would never have chosen to end his life, saying, quote, he was very optimistic and upbeat. He loved the people in his life, and I don't think he would have left them all behind, end quote.
Did anybody actually see him going up towards the mountain?
Yeah, they saw him heading in that direction.
Okay.
Like out of town. Yeah. Like people in town saw him, but nobody saw him like, you know, on the mountain.
Did he have a car or anything?
I assume so. I mean, but that wasn't a part of this, you know, like it wasn't gone or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm just
like he clearly left on foot wherever he went. He clearly left on foot. He didn't take anything with him. Like nothing was missing.
I get that. I'm just wondering whether he was it a suicide note or was it that, you know, he was going through this midlife crisis, thought that he would find answers out there, basically finished his novel and was like, okay, I've come to the decision that I need to start a new life somewhere else.
Right. Well, yeah. So we're going to get into theories. And Trust me, people have asked all of these questions.
I only say that. And obviously, like we've had, you know, many cases where people wander off into the wilderness and they never find any remains.
Right.
But, you know, with that extensive of a search, I don't know how densely wooded the area is or how difficult of a terrain it is. But, you know, they found the other guy. They found Tom.
They did find Tom. Right.
And if this is a hike that is frequented,
mm-hmm.
you would think that by now they would have found something.
You would think, right? Because it's been since 1988.
Right.
But no, they haven't. Now, I will say I did read one thing that claimed that some people who were making a documentary on Keith's case found his wallet in 2021 on the trail, basically, or, you know, on the mountains somewhere. All right, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but this was an Unsolved Mysteries episode, and the Unsolved Mysteries website has updated to, like, include that this wallet was found in 2021. But, like, there haven't been any news stories about the wallet being found. Nothing from the police have said that the wallet has been found. Like, I couldn't find any official.
So it's not corroborated.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't necessarily believe that that was found in 2021, just because as we're recording this, it's 2025 and I can't find any definitive proof of that whatsoever. So from what I understand to be true, nothing has been found of him since 1988. So as the weeks and years went by, Keith's case grew cold. The Clear Creek County Sheriff's Office still lists it as an open missing persons file. And like I said, in 1990, Unsolved Mysteries aired an episode about Keith. And the case drew dozens of new tips. And there have been sightings of him all over, basically, but none have been corroborated. In 2018, Denver TV News revisited the story on its 30th anniversary. Reporter Rick Salinger noted that even decades later, the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Office still has it as an open case and that, quote, too many possibilities, end quote, make it unsolved. So what are the possibilities? Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Boot.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. If you're like me, then you have different family members who have different ailments, and I've recommended Mood to all of them. I legitimately, before recording this, I told my mom about Mood, and she's going to make her first order. Because they have gummies for all sorts of things, for pain relief, for sleeping, for just improving your mood. Their gummies are specially blended and each one feels different. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out in 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I wake up feeling amazing. And each gummy is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. The human body is fascinating, but did you know that scientists are now saying that your gut is the cornerstone of your health? It's not just about digestion. The gut affects everything from your energy levels and mood to weight management and even longevity. Most gut supplements contain probiotics or maybe probiotics and prebiotics, but Bioma contains all three essential ingredients that your gut needs: prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics. And now you can visit gobioma.com/ATTWG today for an extra 15% off your order. That's GOBIOMA.com/ATTWG and get an extra 15% off. Each ingredient in Bioma is science-backed and third-party tested. You just need two capsules before breakfast to take the guesswork out of feeling your best. Go visit gobioma.com/ATTWG today for an extra 15% off your order. That's GOBIOMA.com/ATTWG to get an extra 15% off. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide and 98% saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now, they're taking those results even further by pairing it with a prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings, support sustainable weight management, and boost energy. I know I'm not the only one who's struggled with occasional digestive issues and brain fog, but Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your first order with code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Now, an obvious one is accidental death by misadventure.
Sure.
If Keith was earnestly planning on hiking that mountain starting at like 5 p.m., it's well within reason to consider that he simply got lost, fell, or became incapacitated somehow. The area he was hiking is steep and unforgiving, and he didn't have a map or any supplies. So it's easy to imagine that he could have collapsed somewhere off the trail. As Alpine rescuer Charlie Szymanski noted, a search on such terrain is like looking for a needle in a haystack. If Keith slipped into a ravine or became covered by underbrush, his body might never be found. Suicide is another theory that I won't say is necessarily the prevailing theory, but it's definitely up there.
I mean, with the way that he ended his book, like...
It definitely feels that way, right?
It feels like it, yeah.
The parallels to Tom Young's case have led to speculation that Keith might have intended to take his own life. Both men disappeared near Silver Plumes Mountains. Both left behind unfinished novels and a trail of clues. In Keith's case, the discovery of that passage about walking into the forest and a statement, quote, "If I don't come back, call the rescue," have been pointed to as ominous hints. However, those who knew Keith reject this idea. As I mentioned, his wife doesn't believe it, and friends also say that he looked forward to his family and life back home, not to ending it. And the other thing, too, is right before his disappearance, like it was that week, if not, you know, a day or two before, he had been in touch with his old boss at the, not his old boss, but his boss at the paper, and had talked about coming back, and like he wanted to cover the Bulls basically when he came back. So he was talking to his boss about that and seeing, I guess, like what could potentially happen. So he was making plans to return to his job in Chicago.
Yes. Mental health crises and suicide attempts, whether successful or not, don't always involve weeks long planning.
No, you're right. A lot. But what I will say is, I think statistically, when it's impulsive like that, that's typically with younger people, not necessarily 50-year-olds.
Sure.
But again, not to say that it couldn't happen. And I think that there's just so much, I mean, confusion around suicide, but also variables.
Right.
You know, and I think that, yeah, it's just such a confusing topic that it's just, it's really hard to say what someone would or wouldn't do. Right. So then there was the idea that it was foul play. And this is, of course, the most alarming theory, that someone killed Keith and possibly killed Tom as well. Now, the reason that people think this is because of the strange coincidences. Both men rented the exact same storefront in Silver Plume. Plus, there were the questions of whether Tom's death was actually a suicide. If it wasn't self-inflicted, then that means that a killer was operating in the area and that someone might have silenced Keith when he began poking around. Before I get into like more details about that, I will say that in the years since Keith has disappeared, the sheriff has been like, oh, yeah, we found other skulls like up on the mountain and whatnot. Like they think that there is a possibility that there was a serial killer around there. But none of the skulls that they found were Keith, like they tested it, but a lot of weird shit happens in the Colorado mountains.
Maybe I don't want to go there.
Right, yeah, maybe you're rethinking our vacation plans now. But there's another famous missing person case that we haven't covered, but it was like season two of Up and Vanished, I want to say. But it was Crystal Riesinger who, again, went to this like weird small Colorado town up in the mountains somewhere and disappeared under very suspicious circumstances. So like things like this do happen. And in this particular case, it could have been related to rumors of illegal nuclear waste dumping in abandoned Silver Plume mines. So you're right. I was wrong. I guess mines do make an appearance in this. So there's this author named Mike Eccles who's chronicled these rumors. And these stories about this illegal dumping are stories that Tom Young was apparently aware of. Tom had once told two acquaintances that trucks were hauling waste from a nearby nuclear plant into mine shafts. So if Tom was investigating those claims, some suggest, perhaps he was murdered. And then Keith, in turn, was eliminated for also digging in too deep. What I will say about this theory is this is the one that Keith's son, Kai, seems to believe. He says that he believes his father, quote, stumbled across something he wasn't supposed to know, end quote. But with that said, no suspect has ever been identified. And investigators again say that they have too many possibilities and no real evidence. But still, the coincidences trouble people. Tiffany Reinhardt, who's Keith's daughter, and others find it hard to believe that the parallels between Keith and Tom are just random. And so, yeah, like the problem that I have with foul play is, like you said before, I mean, Tom said that he was going to Europe when he was never going to Europe.
Right.
Keith said that he was going to climb the mountain.
Right.
It does seem unlikely, I guess, that they would both kind of tell these stories before getting murdered.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, at least in Tom's case, it definitely, to me, that is a big red flag for suicide.
Right.
With Keith, I mean, it's the book, the ending to the book, or at least the last paragraph of the book.
Yeah, that he wrote, yeah.
That kind of mirrors what happened
mm-hmm.
to Tom. And then he goes on this hike that he's definitely not prepared for at 5 o'clock, knowing that he's not going to come back.
Yeah.
I mean, it just... It screams suicide to me.
Yeah. I mean, I can still see misadventure. Like, maybe he was just delusional, you know?
There's that possibility, too.
I truly thought he was going to somehow do this.
Yeah. I mean, there's that possibility, too.
Yeah.
I think it's far-fetched to say that either of these two were got caught up or were involved in some conspiracy from a toxic waste dumping nuclear power plant, maniacal, you know, corporate mogul.
Right.
Not saying that that's outside of the realm of possibilities, but it's a little bit less likely in my mind.
Yeah. To me, it would seem more likely if they both didn't give alternate stories right before they disappeared.
Right.
Like if they just literally just, you know, went to lunch at the diner and then nobody ever saw them again, then I would actually believe it a little bit more, right? Like it would seem like, okay, well, maybe.
Or if there was more evidence that
yeah.
either of them were actually looking into this.
Right, right.
Like, okay, let's say Tom was looking into it and this did happen. And then, but Keith wasn't looking into it. He was investigating the story behind Tom, but just to write his own novel, and then he happened upon some illegal dumping. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
Yeah. And I just feel like, and again, I don't know what the political climate was like in the 80s when it came to stuff like that, but I feel like the EPA had just been established basically like mm-hmm. maybe 10 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like people cared about illegal dumping at that point that much, that like they would just start killing people over it to hide it. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that whoever was doing this dumping would have gotten in enough trouble to justify them just murdering people.
Yeah, it would have been like fines.
Right. That's kind of what I'm thinking. And maybe we're wrong. Like maybe.
Yeah, sure. You're right.
There was more of a motive. I don't know. It just seems unlikely, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just jaded.
But I also think that if either of them had actually been investigating like this, that people would have known about it. Keith wouldn't have said to his friend, "Hey, I wrote a fictional novel and I'm just going up for a hike," when he was secretly going to investigate toxic waste dumping.
Yeah,
I feel like he probably would have told his friend, "Hey, this is crazy. Listen to what I uncovered."
Exactly. And I think this is what Tom was getting into. And, you know, I absolutely think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I get it. Novelists, like, you know, they want to keep the twist at the end of the novel a secret. But if upon researching for a fiction novel, you uncover something that's actually happening, I think it's a different reaction, especially given that he was a journalist.
Right. You're exactly.
Like, yeah, he covered sports, right?
But he was still a
journalist. Like, there's no way that he would have kept super tight-lipped about that.
Right.
He would have called his boss and something to his boss.
100%. If he was actually on the trail of something, you're right. He would have called the Herald. He would have been like, "Look, I'm in this weird Colorado mining town, but I've uncovered something.
I've got a like this juicy, crazy story for you. It's not sports related,
but I'm going to publish this, and then you're going to let me cover the Bulls,
right?
You know,
exactly.
So there's one last theory, and you actually kind of alluded to this earlier, that this was a planned disappearance. So having taken a sabbatical and rented a shop in a new town, some wonder if Keith decided to take this further and start a whole new life somewhere else. After all, the day he vanished, he repeated his plan in front of many people, which some say was a way to throw folks off and make them think that he had disappeared or died on the mountain. But practically speaking, the theory doesn't hold up well. Keith left behind all of his belongings, his unfinished manuscript, and the family he claimed to love. But again, that's what people do, right?
Robert Hoagland.
I knew you were going to bring him up.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about this theory, that's literally what he did.
It is.
And he disappeared on a hiking trail.
And that's true.
He was found, what, 10 years later?
Yeah.
What, like 40 minutes from his his family?
Yeah.
Having started a completely new life.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. And I think that, you know, if you take that last paragraph in his book, right, you could see that as a suicide note, but you could also see it as a goodbye of a like, hey, I'm going to write this and leave it as a clue, but not a real clue, as a misdirection almost, you know?
Yeah. And hey, this is 1988, right? Like,
it was a lot easier.
There's no cell phones. There's barely any CCTV footage anywhere.
Yeah.
There's no facial recognition.
Nope.
I doubt he had any DNA in any database.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you could very easily disappear
and start a new life.
Yes.
Because there was, like, it wasn't even hard to get documentation at that point.
I mean, depending on where you were in the country, most of the documentation, to include driver's licenses, were paper.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, it really, truly was a lot easier at that point. So he very well could have just been like, you know what? It's not working out here. It's not working out in Chicago. I'm going for a third option, and I'm going to disappear in this dramatic literary way.
Yeah, where people would go up the mountain and search for him and not look for him two towns over.
Yeah.
Or however far away he went.
Right.
To some other small town in Colorado.
No, absolutely. But in the end, there's no evidence that Keith took a train or hitchhiked out or, you know, however he would have gotten to wherever he ended up. He just simply vanished. But all of these scenarios, accident, suicide, murder, hoax, have been considered, but none of them explains everything.
Right.
What is clear is that by the night of August 7th, 1988, Keith Reinhard had truly vanished. After the search ended, the only clue left was the open pages of his novel on the computer. Words that read unnervingly like a scene of disappearance. But apart from that, there was nothing. No body, no traces, and no final note. Even today, the case is unresolved. The Colorado authorities still encourage anyone with information to come forward. In the years since, others have revisited the story. In addition to Unsolved Mysteries, in 2020, the Travel Channel's Lost in the Wild spent time on the case. And each new telling raises old questions. Was there a link between Tom's death and Keith's disappearance? Was someone walking those slopes at the same time as Keith? Or did he perish quietly, never to be found? For now, the silence on Pendleton Mountain speaks loudly. Keith Reinhard remains one of Colorado's enduring mysteries. And as his son Kai said, the hope is that someday someone who knows something will step forward. But until then, the mountains keep their secrets. Keith Reinhard has been missing from Silver Plume, Colorado since August 7th, 1988. He is a white male with gray hair and blue eyes. At the time of his disappearance, he was approximately 6'2" and 210 pounds. He was last seen wearing a t-shirt, a dark red and black plaid flannel shirt, blue jeans, and old sneakers. Keith was 49 when he went missing. He would be 87 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Keith Reinhard, please contact the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department at 303-679-2376. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. Our research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.